Okay, welcome everybody to the Torah in Motion Parshat HaShavua class. It looks like I'm in charge tonight. So it looks like all the adults are gone. So we kids have the run of the house and we can have a good time tonight. Okay, so let's see. Everybody should be mute. I'm going to mute everybody now. Just so that, you know, we don't make too much noise, but you can unmute yourselves if you need to. Okay. All right. So everybody has a chumash, I hope. If you need an English translation, please avail yourself of one, because what I'm going to show you may not, it looks better in the Hebrew and I don't have Hebrew/English. So I will translate as I go, but if you need the English there all the time, just have that handy. And let's go. All right, so I want to see everybody. There we go. Okay, a lot of people are hiding behind their whatever. So if you want to turn your cameras on, that would be really nice. That I'd appreciate that. Okay, let's go. This week's parsha is Miketz, and it is a continuation of the Yosef story. And so you have to remember what happened last week and the week before, and we'll build on that. So our story picks up 2 years later. So Yosef is languishing in prison. The Sar Hamashkim has got out of jail, and he got his job back, and the Sar Ha'Ofer, Chief Baker, he's gone. And Yosef is languishing in prison. And Rabbi David Foreman, a teacher and colleague of mine, has this theory about how Yosef interpreted his dream. And so we're gonna look at that. But before we even do that, I just wanted to lay out the questions that have always bothered me before I really looked closely at this parasha. Questions about this. The dreams, the Paro's dream and what Yosef did with it. So one of the big questions is, how did Yosef figure it out? How did he figure out the Paro's dreams when the Chartumim, the scientists and the wizards, who have a lot of experience with his dreams, couldn't do it. They could not give him a satisfactory answer, and Yosef did. So what did he know that the wizards didn't know? How did he get that dream interpreted? And the other big question is, why did the Paro believe him? Why did he believe Yosef's explanation more than the explanations of the Chartumim? And why did the Paro give him so much power so quickly? This guy just got out of prison. He was a nobody. In fact, he was a slave. And all of a sudden, the Paro says, "You're speaking the truth. I believe you, and here's my ring, here's my chariot, here's a wife, here's everything. Take everything, you're in charge." How did that happen? How is it that the Paro believed him, and how is it that Yosef figured out the dream? Okay, so figuring out the dream, that's Rabbi Foreman's part. And he, Rabbi Foreman, believes and understands and teaches that dreams are a method of divine communication all through Sefer Bereishit. The Avot are always getting dreams, and in their dreams, God communicates with them. But after the first three Avot, people who have dreams don't have a conversation with God in their dream. And so you might, and the commentators do, believe, all right, it's just dreams. Rabbi Foreman suggests that the dreams, that Yosef's dream and the Paro's dream, are a type of communication from God to his characters. Yosef and the Paro, and even us, we are getting a message through these dreams. It's not that God is speaking to us directly and announcing, "Ani Hashem, and listen to what I say," but through the dream, there is a kind of oblique or sideways communication, and that the Paro certainly believes this. He's the head of an empire, and he does believe that the gods communicate with humans through dreams, and that's And that's their belief. But Rabbi Foreman says, this is what he teaches, that in Bereshit, these dreams are also a means of communication, but they're encrypted. You need to know the cipher. You have to have a key to unlock the dream. And Yosef gets a hold of the key to the dream from the dream. The Paro's dream is twofold. Remember, there are cows and then there are grain heads. So the Paro is dreaming about cows and grain. The cow part of the dream, Rabbi Foreman suggests, is directed at Yosef. In the cow part of the dream, Yosef will pick up the key to unlock the meaning of the dream. The grain part of the dream, that's directed at the Paro. That's talking about the economy of Egypt, and that's directed at him. But the cow part of the dream, that's Yosef's. That's going to key Yosef in. So he is going to use not only the Paro's dream, but he's also going to use his own dreams that he dreamed when he was younger, back earlier in Bereshit, in Vayeshev. That was back a while ago. The dreams that he didn't understand. He was dreaming about he and his brothers were gathering grain and making bundles, and he didn't understand that because they're not farmers. Why is he dreaming about something he doesn't do? And he begged his brothers to give him an answer, to explain it. They were so angry with him already that they interpreted the dream on the basis of their hatred for him. And they said, oh, you want to rule over us. And apparently, and as we see, as it works out, that wasn't what the dream was all about. Yosef wasn't dreaming about ruling over his brothers. He was dreaming about Egypt, and he didn't know it. The second dream, also, the brothers immediately jumped to the conclusion that he was trying to, you know, rule over them. And even Yaakov misunderstood that dream and jumped to the same conclusion and got all upset. But Yosef didn't understand the dream, and he won't understand the dream until he stands before the Paro, and then his second dream he can finally interpret, and it comes, and we can understand it too. The second dream doesn't have anything to do with his mother and his father bowing down to him. It's bigger than that, but we have to look at it. So the Torah is constructed, as you know, in a way that makes clear to us what's going on in reality. In reality, the conversation between the Paro and Yosef is not in Hebrew. It's in Egyptian. The divine author, when he writes the Torah for us, he writes it in Hebrew, and he's translating the conversation into Hebrew. And he's using specific Hebrew words that have been used before. And if we are clever, and if we listen carefully and look carefully, we can pick up the clues that Yosef was picking up. And it's written in Hebrew, so we can do it because we don't understand Egyptian. And it's there forever because we are supposed to be able to read Hebrew thousands and thousands of years later. And if we look carefully, we'll pick up the clues in the same way that Yosef did. Although Yosef is listening to Egyptian, we're listening to the Hebrew. So how is it that Yosef figures out what the cows are and what the number 7 means? So I'm going to share my screen now so you can see what I'm doing. So I am in Bereshit chapter 41. That's me, Kate. And you can follow along in the English if you need to. So let's get this going. So I'm going to share this. Okay. There's a lot of stuff here. Okay, you should be able to see this thing that says Paro dreams, Yosef understands. Good. Everybody sees that. That's excellent. And is it big enough for everybody? Okay.
Be a little bigger.
A little bigger. Let's see what we can do here.
You can make it bigger by pinching it out on your iPad.
Ah, that's if I was using an iPad, but I'm not. So hold on. Okay, to Zoom, yeah.
No, each individual person on their own iPad.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Debbie. Yes. You can all do it yourselves, really. But I could zoom. Oh, here it is. This is this thing. Can I make this? I should be able to make this whole thing bigger. All right. You guys can do it yourselves, right? Everybody can make it big enough.
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay, good. All right. So here we are. This is the beginning of the dream sequence. Remember now, the dream is going to be repeated. The first time of the dream is given to us is the divine author's version of the dream, which we assume is what Paro saw in the dream. Then the Paro is going to repeat the dream in his version, and the differences between the versions will also be a great source of information for us, the reader. Okay, so it starts out, this is the way the parsha opens. 2 years have gone by, and Paro cholem. Paro's dreaming, vihine, and in a dream, things happen like bzz, all of a sudden. And that's the way things are in a dream. The scene shifts so quickly, and there's no real, like, there's no continuity in a dream. Things just happen, and then another thing happens. So the hine repeats here to emphasize the spontaneity and the kind of craziness of the dream. Vihine, he's dreaming, vihine. And there, whoa, look, Omed al hayor. Someone is standing on the river. Who's standing on the river? I don't know. Not yet. Vihine. And then next, bzz, out of the river comes up, rises up, seven parot yefot mar'eh. Oh, they're beautiful cows. Seven yefot mar'eh. Notice how I bolded it. Little bells should start going off in your head about something or someone who has already been described in the Torah as Yifot Mar'eh in the Yosef story. And then not only are they beautiful, but they are Briot Basar. They are fat. They are healthy. A lot of meat on their bones. Vatir'ena ba'ahu, and they are, well, are they grazing? Are they shepherding? They're probably grazing contextually. That's what cows do. Ba'ahu. Again, a singular word. The commentators fuss about it, and they kind of settle on, well, where would they be grazing? Must be something that's grassy. Let's call it a marsh. Okay, it's a marsh. I don't know what it is, but look at the spelling. Tir'ena ba'ahu. Bells should start going off again. And now, hine, again. Bzz. There are seven more cows come out. Others, acherot. Other one, the other one, coming up out behind them from the Nile, from the river, and now they are ra'ot mar'eh. If the first cows were beautiful, and we want to distinguish that these cows are going to be very different, the opposite of beautiful is not bad or evil. It's ugly. The word should be ugly, but it's not. Okay, we need that word. We need the raw word. Okay, and they are dakot basar. Remember, the first ones were fat, bari. They were healthy and fat. These guys are dakot, skinny, thin. And instead of grazing, which you'd think they would, no, but it's a dream. Vata'amodna etzel ha'parot al sfat ha'yor. They just stand there next to the other cows. So we have cows that are, munchy, munchy, eating, 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 eating. And then these other, lean and evil looking cows are just standing there. And it looks like, okay. But then, vatochalna ha'parot ro'ot ha'mar'eh v'hadakot basar. They eat these bad or evil or, yeah, bad looking and skinny cows, eat the seven beautiful fat cows. This is a nightmare. Cows don't eat cows. To see cows eating cows is horrifying. And the Paro wakes up because that's what you want to do when you're in the middle of a nightmare. You want to wake up. And he does wake up. But then, whew, He goes back to sleep and he dreams again. And now the whole scene shifts. Where is the Paro? Are we still on the Nile? Are we near the water? Do we know? No. There's no mention of Nile, water, Paro. It's just the Paro doesn't seem to be, well, we don't even know if he was in the dream the first time, but we don't know where we are. That's the thing. Because the Nile is not being mentioned. But then we have seven shibolim, seven grain heads are rising up or coming out of or coming up on one stalk. And they are briot, they are fat, and tovot, they are full, they are complete. Tov has the meaning sometimes of complete. They are, you know, ready to be harvested. Oh, yes. But we have another hine out of the, somewhere. Sheva shibolim dakot. Oh, here's that word dakot again. Now we have another seven grain heads that are thin. And shtufot kadim, translated variously, but we will just say that they are stunted by the east wind, which is that hot wind coming out of the east. So we have beautifully formed grain heads, seven of them again. And then we have these seven horrible looking, just stunted, nothing there. Tzomchot achareihen, but they're growing behind them. So do you think that there are two stalks with seven grain heads each? Or is this one stalk with 14 grain heads? Don't know. It's a dream, so anything goes. But then the nightmare begins again. Vativlana hashibolim hadakot, these seven thin, blasted grain heads swallow the seven fat, full, beautiful. No, they're not beautiful. They're just healthy, fat, and full, that, you know, full of grain, the seven. Again. So these are plants swallowing plants. This sounds like Little Shop of Horrors. Where is the mouth that opens up to swallow the one and the other? It's a nightmare. Vayikatz paro vihine chalom. The paro wakes up. And now how to translate vihine chalom. Do we translate that as it was just a dream? Or do we translate it as, woo boy, this is a dream with a capital D. This is very, very significant. It could have national significance. The paro is dreaming something that's queer and strange and crazy. And he needs answers. Okay. So nobody can give him any answers. But the repetition of the dream is going to show us some things. So instead of, I'm going to run through the repetition because we'll never have time to do the whole thing. Okay, so now Yosef's brought in. He's pulled out of the pit of the dungeon that he was in. And he's cleaned up, he's shaved, he's showered, new clean clothes. He's putting his best foot forward to come into the Paro's throne room. And Rabbi Foreman suggests that Yosef sees this as the fulfillment of the prayers that he has been making these past 2 years. He didn't sit in the prison and just, I don't know, do crossword puzzles. He was praying for help. And hoping that maybe the Sar HaMashkim would say something or somebody would say something. Something has to happen. And then something happens. When he's pulled out of that prison and brought to the Paro, he believes that this is Min HaShemayim. God has done this and he needs to be on red alert for any clues that are going to help him when he walks into that throne room. And so he comes in. And the Paro tells his dream to Yosef, as he told the dream to everybody else. So now I'm in, this is verse 17, if you're following along in the English. So now the Paro tells Yosef his dream. Notice the difference. Paro says to Yosef, in my dream, b'chalomi, in my dream, hineni omed al sfat hayor. Here I am in my dream. I am standing, hinini omed, I am standing on the river bank. He's not standing on the water. He says, I'm standing on the river bank. So we're going to need this information in a little while. But the difference between standing on the water and standing on the bank of the river are two different places. The paro says, I was standing on the bank of the river. If the paro was really standing on the water in his dream, wouldn't he have said so? I mean, after all, he is a god. He advertises himself as a god. Why shouldn't he, a god, be able to stand on water? When we first presented this to my Tanakh class 9 years ago, there was a chorus of who stands on water, and it was a god or someone who thinks that he's a god. That's the person who stands on water, walks on the water. So the paro, if he had been the omeid here in his dream, when we heard the dream for the first time, he would have said it because he thinks he's a god and he wants everyone to believe he was a god. Why shouldn't he say, and there I was standing on the water, standing on the river, you know, like the god that I am. But he doesn't say that. He said he puts himself on the riverbank, like he doesn't want to identify himself with the one who is standing on the water. Okay. And then again, he repeats the dream that we're familiar with. Seven beautiful cows, briot basar, they're healthy, they're fat, and yifat toar. So you see this? We have a yifat mar'eh and a yifat toar. You know, if you didn't get it the first time, you definitely have to get it the second time. Who's being talked about in this dream? Who's in the dream? Who's being referenced in the dream that Paro doesn't know what he's talking about? But somebody who's listening to the dream, i.e. Yosef, can say, oh, I know who that is.
That's Yosef.
It's Yosef. Yosef is also, yes, I'm on the second page of these notes. Yosef is described as Yefe Toar and Vife Mar'eh. And who else is described that way? Mommy, Rachel.
Rachel.
Yes, here she is. Rachel Haita Yefat Toar and Vifat Mar'eh. Yeah, so the paro is just saying the cows were this and the cows were that. And Yosef, who is listening with every ounce of his brain, is saying, those cows are me and my mother. Oh, wait. And they're grazing ba'achu? Or are they shepherding with their brothers? See the achu? It could be Be'achiv, with his brothers. This is the story of my life. Yosef says, the paro is talking about cows, but meanwhile, Yosef is saying, he's talking about my life, my old life back in Canaan. And there were beautiful cows coming out. And then there were these other cows, and they were Ra'ot Mar'eh, and they were Dakot. Well, Dakot doesn't help us right away, but when the paro repeats the dream, that is when the divine author writes it again to give us more clues,
brothers.
They are
the brothers.
Yeah. They are Rakot Basar. Rakot and Dakot. Who's that? These other, they are Acherot. They are other cows. That's a description of the Ene Lea Rakot. Now, one's a kaf and one's a kuf. But if you're listening to the dream, if you're listening to the tale of the dream, it's the same. We have, oh, wow. And then we have Lea. And then remember, we have to go way back to the story of the marriage of Rachel and Leah to Yaakov. First, remember, He thought he was getting Rachel, but he didn't get Rachel. He got Leah. And then Lavan says to Yaakov, Malei Sheva, Malei Shevua Zot, complete the week for this one, that is Rachel's, you know, Sheva Brachos. Venitna lecha gam, I mean Leah's Sheva Brachos. Venitna lecha gam et Zot, and then I'll give you this one. Notice how he refers to his daughters as this and this. Ba'avoda asher ta'avod imadi od sheva shanim acherot. Acharehem, acherot. And what are we talking about here? I got to get back upstairs. Here we go. So these are the other cows. The other cows, the Leah cows. And this sheva, 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 sheva. What is the seven? The Khartoumim couldn't figure out what the seven was. They said it was seven cities, seven daughters, seven sons, seven wars. They thought that because the seven cows are things and the seven Shibolim are things, they thought that the seven meant seven things. But what does the seven mean?
Years.
There were the 7 years that he served for each wife.
Yes, exactly. That's it. The seven is years. In fact, he said you will work another 7 years. So now he's got the key. Something is going to happen for 7 years and then another 7 years. 7 years, 7 years. Now, what about the, okay, we're on a roll here. But what about those 7 years and those 7 years? The first 7 years that Yaakov worked thinking he was getting Rachel, they were kiyamim achadim. They just flew by. We could say that they were good years. He was working towards getting Rachel. But the second 7 years that he worked after that, those years were not good years. They were bitter years. They were bad years because he felt he was being robbed. He felt the Lavan had robbed him, which he did. He was forced to work another 7 years, and those were not good years. Those were bad years. So now it's coming clear. Seven good years, and they will be followed by seven bad years. Okay, but what does that mean for Yosef? What does that mean? It doesn't mean very much when it comes to cows. The cows get him into Rachel cows and Leah cows. That means Rachel's children, Leah's children. And it's not seven and seven children. It's 7 and 7 years. Okay. And there are good years followed by bad years. So, but what does this have to do with Egypt? What does this have to do with Paro? It's the second dream of the grain heads. 7 years where the grain is good and full and plentiful. And then afterwards, there will be seven bad crop years. That's what Yosef understands. That's what he understands. But how does that go over with the Paro? So somebody says to you, this kid comes out of jail, doesn't know anything about anything. And he says, oh, I know that this is the dream. It's all one dream. And there's the Nile is going to flood for 7 years, 7 years in a row, great harvest. And then there's going to be 7 years of famine. Why should the Paro believe him? Why should anybody believe him? Isn't that the most ridiculous thing an Egyptian could ever hear? The Nile floods every year, like Old Faithful. Every year it floods, and every year the fields are watered. This is what Egypt is known for. Remember when Lot wanted to live in the Jordan Valley near the river, and he didn't want to live up in the mountains with Avram because he had been in Egypt, and he saw that Egypt was like the garden of the Lord. It was like Gan Eden. It was watered by a river. You never had to think about rain. It always flooded. And so now this kid says, this Yosef guy says, 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine, and the Nile will not, it will not function for 7 years. 7 years it will function, and for the next 7 years, there will be a famine, and there will be no crops grown. Why in the world would anybody believe him?
Because he's giving an answer. He's giving a what you're going to do. Here's your problem. You've dreamt this thing. He's dreamt it. Pharaoh's dreamt it twice.
Yeah, but wait. Why would the Pharaoh not turn to Yosef and say, that's ridiculous?
He knew the answer because Pharaoh was given the answer too.
No, there's no indication that Pharaoh knew the answer.
If I may, the answer is a bit more simple. The person who is in charge is always worried that he's not going to be supported. He may be a god, or at least claim to be a god, but there's always something lurking in the shadows that can take away his prosperity. And famines have been known in the past, and so it's not unreasonable that there's another famine coming. And especially since it fits the dreams, both of them, so neatly, it's just an overwhelming convincing.
That's a nice way of saying it. But
also, Yosef was already proven. He already interpreted a dream correctly.
Yeah, but that was a simple dream. Those dreams were too simple. This is a very negative interpretation.
It was two different dreams, two different types of things.
The Pharaoh doesn't know about that. The Pharaoh doesn't know that whole story. We know that story, but he doesn't know the story.
It resonated with him.
Well, why did it resonate? It's more than resonation.
He was concerned about food and he's the leader and he has to make sure that there's always a good economy there. Yes. And he might have had some doubts about it. Mm-hmm. And here comes Yosef and says, you know, I think there's trouble with the capital T. And so when he hears somebody who has no skin in the game, he's a slave. He's not from the upper crust, telling him something like this. He says, yep, that's exactly what I was worried about. And now you're confirming my deepest fears. But you're giving me some hope. He's not anybody who's a familiar face. He says, yeah, that's you put your finger on the problem.
That's good. That's good.
All of this
is not in the text. Of course, it's not in the text. Yes, that's true. But there's something in the dream that's making him believe Yosef. It's not just that he's willing to believe the worst. Usually, you know, autocrats don't like to hear bad news and they don't want to hear bad news and they'd rather have good news than bad news. And all the Khartoumim were giving him good news. Somehow or other, he didn't like that. But this, he really, and immediately, he doesn't even question him. He says, oh my gosh, this is perfect. This is just right. Okay, so
what he started that time, Egypt was one of the biggest nation producing wheat.
Exactly. Yes.
So what happened? Not only they produce wheat, they were also the first people to know what to do with that, with the bread by itself, baking breads and everything else. At that time, they were superior to any other country in the region. So once the dream moves from the cows, from one field, one area, to the wheat, from the cows to the wheat, then he knew that what he hears, that gave him the message that this guy knows what he's talking about.
Perhaps, although cows don't mean as much to the paro as the wheat, as the grain. Because their economy is agriculture and grain, not so much the cows, more that. But so now, wait, I told you to look at this. The Hine Omed Al Hayor. There is someone the divine author tells us, this is the message for us. Yosef got the message about how to interpret the dream that the seven is 7 years. Nice. The Paro is getting his part of the, he understands the grain is being affected. He gets that part. But there's another part of the dream that's our part of it, that's directed at us. There's someone standing on the river. Who is standing on the river? Some figure is on the water and seems to be orchestrating the events of the dream. The cows come, the cows go. These cows are eating each other. The grain is swallowing each other. All these horrible, macabre things are happening. And it seems it's all under the orchestration of this Omeid Al HaYaor, this godlike figure that's standing on the river. And then when the Paro repeats his dream to Yosef, he says, oh, I was only standing on the banks of the river. And he does not mention who or what or the fact that there was somebody else in the dream, someone or something else in the dream. Now,
No.
This is very, very, very specific. The words choices of the divine author here are extremely specific. Al Hayor is not Al Sfat Hayor. That's, and this is the diuk here. He's not Al Yad Hayor, he's Al Hayor. He's standing on the river or standing over the river, but he's not on the banks of the river. He's not next to it, he's on it. This figure seems to be a godlike figure. Now the question is, who is that figure? So we need to work with more of the, no, we have to go further here. Okay, so if you noticed here, in the repetition of the dream, starting in verse 17, let's go down to verse 19 and 20. When the Paro repeats the dream, look what he says. Remember, the seven other cows come out after them, and they are Rakot Basar. Okay, those are the Leah cows. That is the other brothers, Yosef's other brothers. And now the Paro says something that is a commentary on his dream. As he says it, no one spoke in the dream, but now the Paro is telling the dream, and he editorializes, and he says in verse 19, Lo ra'iti kahena b'chol eretz Mitzrayim la roa. I've never seen such evil cows or bad cows in all of Egypt. So here we have the word roa. And then we have in the next verse following, Vatochalna haparot harakot v'hareot. And then these evil bad cows ate the good cows, or the first cows. So we have the juxtaposition of roa and achal, something evil that ate. And it's associated with the Leah cows, that is the brothers. Where have you heard those words before? And about whom were they saying?
Yosef. The Suda after they sold Joseph.
Now that's that has.
No, happened. They came to Yaakov and they told Yaakov, Hayara Hansa.
Very good. Excellent. That's exactly what it is. The brothers said their plan was, we're going to take the coat, we'll tear it up, we'll put blood all over it, and we will give it to our father, and we will say, Chaya ra'a achlatahu, an evil animal ate it. Chaya ra'a is the terrible way of describing a wild animal. A chaya is a wild animal, but animals aren't evil. They're not bad. They just do what they do. This ra'a, the chaya ra'a, is the way the divine author writes it here. And he's going to use these words as the hint in the future. But then what happened? The brothers came back, and before they could say what they wanted to say, Yaakov is the one who blurted out, "Oh no, this is my son's coat. Chaya Rava Alatahu. Oh gosh, Tarov Tarov Yosef." Yaakov said this about Yosef. The brothers thought it about Yosef, but was it true? No. So we need those. We need two pieces of information from the earlier story. They're talking about Yosef, and it's not true, but the father thought it was true. Yaakov thinks this is what happened. It's about Yosef, and it really didn't happen. It's not true, but Yaakov thought it was true. Ra'a chaya, ra'a achalatuhu. Those words refer to Yosef, but Yosef doesn't know it because Yosef never heard that part of the story. He was on his way to Egypt. The Yishmaelim had him. He wasn't there when his father said, Chaya ra'a achalatahu. He didn't hear that, but we did. We know that those words are talking about Yosef. Yosef is in the dream somewhere, and it's not true, but the father believes it is. And so I suggested, and it wasn't just me, it was my whole class together. We all came to the conclusion that the Omeid al Hayor was Yosef. In his dream, the Paro saw a figure standing on the water that looked like a god. And that figure walked into his throne room and is standing there. And the Paro almost fell off his chair because the god in the dream is now standing in his throne room and telling him what his dream means. And so he's certainly not going to claim, the Paro, it's not going to claim that I, the Paro, was standing on the river, because the god in the dream who is communicating with him and giving him a message about the national economy has now just walked into his throne room to tell him what to do to save Egypt. And so the Paro just says, oh, I was just standing on the riverbank. But he doesn't want to say, and I saw you in my dream too, because that's not, you know, God etiquette. You don't want to point fingers at the God who was in your dream and is now standing here incarnate in the flesh. And this was what we thought. Oh, that must be what it is. And there's another hint in the dream that we, the reader, should pick up, although Yosef himself doesn't know it, but we know it. And that's here when the Paro says in verse 21, he comments and he says, those beautiful, fat, healthy cows, they, batavona el kirbena, they entered into the skinny cows, velo no daki ba'u el kirbena. And it was not obvious. You couldn't tell that they were inside the evil cows. You couldn't tell. It's like swallowed them and they made no difference. It didn't change them at all. We know what that means. The brothers went back home and pretended like nothing happened. Yosef disappeared. He's gone. We don't know what happened to him. They say, we don't know what happened to him. V'lo noda ki bo'o el kirbena. They swallowed him, and they claimed that it made no effect on them. And all the years that their father grieved for Yosef, because they let him think he was dead, it didn't affect them. They had no effect on them. Lo noda ki bo'o el kirbena. They just let it ride. We know that. Yosef doesn't know that, and the Paro doesn't know that. But it's another clue that we are talking about, that Yosef is, he's somewhere in this dream. And I and my class, we propose that this Omeid is Yosef. Now, That was great. But you know, it's just a hypothesis of mine. Yeah. Great, Ruthie. Okay. Do you have any other proof for that? I didn't have any other proof until I began to wonder about his name, the name that he gave him. Let me see. Do I have that on this sheet? No. But I can see here. Just another little proof text here. I'll get to that in a second. Wait a minute, Chaim. So first, another support for this Yosef disappearing. And we know that that's what they're talking about. When somebody disappears and you can't find him or see him, that's the way the brothers spoke about Yosef back in the day. When Reuven returned to the pit, remember they were eating lunch and they had thrown him into the pit. And then the Canaanim came by and pulled him out of the pit and sold him to the Yishmaelim. He looked into the pit, Vihine, Ein Yosef. There's no Yosef. And then he runs back to his brothers, because they're still sitting there eating lunch, and he says, the Yeled, the boy, Einenu, he's not. He's like disappeared. And then later on, when they talk to the viceroy in Egypt, they don't know it's Yosef, and they foolishly blur out their whole family history. Oh, yeah, we used to be 12 brothers, but, you know, the little one's back home with our father, and the one, Baha Echad, Einenu, he's not. He's the one who is disappeared, just like the beautiful cow, which he is, was swallowed, chewed up, eaten by the ugly cows, the brothers, and who knows where he is? Einenu, he just disappeared. So that was just another, intertextuality to show that these are the descriptions of Yosef, and then in the dream. Whoops. And then in the dream, it's Yosef. Okay. So then I started thinking about Safnat Paneach. Okay. Everybody has something to say about what it means. So the question is Safnat Paneach, which is the name that the Paro gave to Yosef, thinking that he is a god? What else did the Paro give Yosef immediately? Not only did he accepted his interpretation. Yeah. And then he said, and here's my ring. Take my ring. You can have dominion over my house. You can have dominion over all of Egypt. Nobody will lift a finger or a foot unless you say so. You have complete control. He's giving the god everything. Well, because he should, because this is the god of the Nile. If the god who stood over the Nile says, the Nile is going to flood for 7 years, and then it's not going to flood for 7 years. He's the only one who has the power over the Nile. If he says it's going to happen, it's going to happen. And I have to do everything he says. And what does the Paro say? I don't have it on the sheet. Remember when Yosef, our Yosef, says, oh, you should find someone who is wise and knowledgeable to take care of all of this. And what does the Paro immediately say? Who could possibly be wiser than you? He's talking to the god of the Nile. Of course he's going to say, we can't find anybody more wise than you. Brackets, oh god of the Nile. And so, yes. And then he gives him a wife, the daughter of the Kohen of On. Asenat, and that is the pronunciation. It is Asenat because it's an Egyptian name, and Nat is the name of a god, and the S sound is belongs to. She belongs to the god. She's a priestess, the daughter of a priest. What more fitting wife could there be for a god who has come to live among us? So all of these things now fit in. But why does he call him Safnat Paneach? So is it Hebrew? So the commentators who think that it's Hebrew go off on, Safnat comes from Safun. That means hidden. Paneach, we don't know what that means because we never heard that word before, but we'll say it means translator or interpreter. Safnat Paneach, the one who interprets the things that are hidden. Lovely. But it's it's not a Hebrew name, it's an Egyptian name. So is it Egyptian or is it transliterated Egyptian into Hebrew? That's more like it. It's a Hebrew speaking ear transliterating Egyptian. So it's Egyptian transliterated with Hebrew letters, and it's not going to fit perfectly, but pretty much so. And why would the divine author write his name in Egyptian in the Torah? Because every Jew who's learned the Torah, who got it at Mount Sinai and studied it for 40 years, they all spoke Egyptian. They knew what the name meant. And it meant something that had nothing to do with grain or interpreting dreams. It had to do with what or who the Paro thought he was. And I couldn't put it together. Aryeh Kaplan came pretty close, but then no cigar. Okay, so Aryeh Kaplan in his Living Torah, and you can find this on page 207 of the Living Torah, of Aryeh Kaplan's Living Torah, in a footnote to this pasuk about, and he called himself Not Paneach, he acknowledges that it's an Egyptian name, and he parsed it out. He even found the Egyptian hieroglyphs that match the name, and he translated it fairly well. And he said, this is Rabbi Kaplan, Tzafanat Paneach, Tzapanet, means the net, which is the name of a god, speaks, or the god speaks. Ooh, Tzapanat, the god speaks. Oh, Ruthie, you're on the right track here. And then Paneach is a garbling or a corruption of Pa-anak or Ankh. The Ankh symbol, if you know any little bits about Egyptian symbols, that's the symbol of life or living. So we have Pa-Ankh is he lives. And look how close Rabbi Kaplan got. But he said, so he suggests that the Pa-Ankh, which is Paneach, could mean Lord of Life, or Neth speaks life, or, and this is his third suggestion, and I saw my head exploded, the God speaks, and now he put in brackets, the man lives. But there's a better translation, the God speaks, and he lives. That's why he called him, in Egyptian, Tzapenat Pe'ankh. The God I saw in the dream. You are the God of the dream. You are the God who is incarnate. You are speaking and living. Now, this suggestion of Rabbi Kaplan, he doesn't put a citation. He doesn't show you where it came from. But I found a better source for that. And that is, and I may have to stop the share. Let me see if I can do this. No, that's not it. Okay. I'm going to stop this here for a second and then go to another screen. So let me go and do this again. Thank you for holding on here. It's this one. Okay. Yeah, here we go. Okay. This is so silly, but when I Googled, let's get this off here. Uh-oh. Yeah, that's the second one. No, it's the first one. Okay. If you Google Tzafnat Paneach, you'll get a whole bunch of stuff from Wikipedia. And one of them is a reference to, a citation in the Jewish Encyclopedia. And I went there. They have that online. And there was a comment that, blah, 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 blah. There was an article was published in a journal back in the 1880s, trying to figure out what this is. And it came pretty close philologically, It sounded good, but it didn't have anything to do with Yosef's activities or Yosef's being a dream interpreter or being a grain master. Again, they missed it. So, but I did find it because I was really curious to see if the God speaks and he lives is the proper translation of the Egyptian. And I found an article in here. I'll just give you, this is the name of the journal from 1889. And the name of the journal is, this is the Zeitschrift für Egyptische Sprache und Altertumskunde, which is, this is the journal of Egyptian, you know, language and antiquities or, you know, ancient studies. And, it was, this journal started in 1863 and it was taken over by other people. And this particular article was published in 1889 in the 27. Band, the 27th volume of the journal. Here is the table of contents. This is the name of the article. Der Name Josefs Safenat Paneach, Genesis, Kapitel 41. Chapter 41, that's what we're doing, we're in, verse 45, von Georg Steindorf. Georg Steindorf, I found out, was the preeminent Egyptologist in Europe in the latter part of the 19th century into the 20th century. This was his baby, this journal, and he put in a little letter. It's like a, just one page. It was a research little project of his that he did for his father-in-law, who turned out to be Rabbi Julius Oppenheimer, big reform rabbi in Berlin. Georg married the daughter of Rabbi Julius Oppenheimer, and just like, you know, out of curiosity, his father-in-law said, you know, you're an Egyptologist. Can you do something with this name? You know, what is it? You know what it is. Can you figure it out? And he did. And he wrote this little article in German. I'm not going to read the whole thing for you, but he studied the name. Not only that name, but he also looked at Asenath and Potipharah, which we're not going to do tonight. And then he realized, this is Professor Steindorf, he realized that the name fits into a formula of many Egyptian names from, you know, whatever era he was talking about, this dynasty or that dynasty. And the form is this. First, you have this sound, ts. Then you have the name of the god, and then this f or ep. And then this is ankh. So the tzadi, so excuse me, this tz, this d is a tz sound. That's the tzadi. So that's the tzadi of, you don't have to go here, but there's the tzadi. So the tzadi is this. The name of the god is Penat, Tsa Penat. Then this word tsa, this first word here, means speak. And he has it here, zagen. That means to speak. So the god Penat speaks. F is he, or S, it's either male or female. And this word is the ankh word, ankh, which is the symbol of life. You know, it looks like a mirror, a handheld mirror. It looks like the symbol for female, but it's the ankh, which is this name here. So it's Tsa Penat, and the ep, this F is the f or the p of Paneach or Pa'ankh. These little symbols here, these are the hieroglyphs of Penut or Penat, the name of the god. And this symbol right here, the seated figure, indicates that it's a god. And so he translates this Egyptian into German, and he says, it's very clear. And he said, like, oh, it's the easiest thing in the world. And he translates it as right here. Oh, did you do it? I want to show it to you in the German. Yeah, here it is. This is the second half of the page. Let me just move it over a little bit for me. And he says it means, this is the translation into German of the Egyptian. Es spricht der Gott und lebt. Der Gott, the God speaks it or speaks and he lives. That's Tzafnat Paneach. So, he saw Yosef in his dream. Yosef walks into his throne room and he says, anything you want, anything you say, the God speaks and he lives. That's the name he gave him. And all of Egypt understood the name. And that's where Yosef gets his power, because he's been identified by the Paro as a demigod, a god walking among us. And therefore, everything happens to him. Now, just to tie up a little bit of a loose end here, what about that second dream that I said didn't have anything to do with his mother and his father, but now Yosef understands it? What are numbers and things in dreams? Are they people? Or are they years?
Time.
How many things were in the second dream? The sun, the moon, and 11 stars?
13.
13 years. In 13 years, Yosef is going to be made into a god who can stand in the cosmos and challenge, if he wanted to, Ra, the sun god, the moon god, and the constellations, the other constellations that make up, the zodiac. Because the Paro said, you are one of the gods, and he will have power over Egypt as if he were a god. So the second dream is Yosef dreaming about, he doesn't know it, but that's the dream come true. Not because his father and mother are going to bow down to him, but all of Egypt will bow down to him. So things are not things, they are years. He only understands that dream of long ago, that the things in the dream, just count them. It's 13 things, and those 13 things are 13 years, and in 13 years, he will be put up in the cosmos as one of the gods. So, that's my story.
Great story. Thank you so much.
Okay, so we're out of time, but you know, mommy and daddy are not here, so you can ask questions or make comments.
How do you fit in the next parak? I think it's 42, around 8 or 9, when the brothers come and he remembers his dreams.
That's right. And he remembers his dreams. These are the evil cows who swallowed me alive and tried to make me disappear. And here I am. I'm here. But what about my brother? What about Binyamin? Did they make him disappear like they made me disappear? That's when he starts the next plan. I have to get Binyamin away from them, because they didn't bring Binyamin with them. Is that because they disappeared him? Did they swallow him like they swallowed me? So he needs to find out where Binyamin is and who he is and what happened to him. And then he has this whole machination of getting him down. And Rav Yoel ben Nun believes that Yosef wanted to get Binyamin away from the brothers, and he was just going to start a new nation, the Bnei Rachel. It was just going to be me and Binyamin. We'll make our own nation. We will be Ovdei Hashem, and we'll have nothing to do with those evil cows. So, everybody's so quiet.
Thank you. It was great.
What do you get the 13 years from the dream until when he was a chasmo?
13.
15 years from when Yosef had the dream.
13.
Right.
Yeah, he was 17 when the story starts. He's 17.
He's 17 when he had the dream?
Well, let's assume that. You know, we have only one date point. We have, he's 17 years old. He's shepherding with his brothers. He has dreams. So we assume he's within that 17th year. 13 years later, how old is he?
30.
30. What does it say right there? State b'feirush in the Torah. He was 30 years old when he came to stand before the Paro. That's
late when he sees the brothers, he leaves he doesn't let the Egyptians see him cry because gods don't cry.
Oh, that too.
That's good.
That's very good. That's very good. Okay.
So maybe that's why also like they say, the women wanted to catch a glimpse of him because he was
sure.
A god. They wanted to catch a glimpse of a god, not just because he was so good looking, but just because they wanted to catch a glimpse of a god.
Please, he's also good looking.
When you say that the brothers just acted like he just disappeared and they didn't care, that's not really true about Yehuda, is he? It's because we get the story of how he goes down. He either feels horrible about what happened, or the brothers feel bad about what happened when they see their father and they blame it on him. So in a sense, there's going to be two protagonists when the brothers show up in Egypt. It's going to be Yosef and it's going to be Yehuda. I think that's why the story of Yehuda is in there.
Yehuda, the Vayered Yehuda, we don't really know what that's midrashic. That's a suggestion of Vayered. Maybe he left all of them. He left the family. He had things to work out. And thank God he had Tamar to pull him back in and show him, you know, how to be a man. But so when it started, when they all came, Yehuda's the one who said, oh, ma betza ki naro getachinu. Oh, why should we kill him? What good will that be to kill him? After all, he is our brother. Of course, you know, selling your brother, that's okay. Come on. Yehuda was.
Reuven did seem to care. Reuven came back to get him. Reuven, he seemed to care.
Yes, Reuven did. But Yosef doesn't know that. Remember, that's something Yosef doesn't know. Because Yosef was gone by the time Reuven got back to the pit. So all Yosef knows is the Leah, the brothers, the Leah children had it in for him. He didn't know anything about Reuven speaking up for him because he wasn't there. We know it, but he doesn't know it. So you have to remember when you look at the dream and the way the dreams, Paro's dreams are presented, you have to remember who God is giving us hints and messages. So there's something like, I always get a little shiver of like, wow, God is speaking to us. He's speaking to me. He's giving me hints. And if I can figure it out, you know, I did it, or not, just not me, but anyone who reads and finds the clues that God has planted in the story so that you can figure it out. And then you have to piece it all together. The one thing that God couldn't control for is that we would have forgotten Egyptian. But, so we wouldn't catch it that way. But also, you know, someone somewhere is going to figure it out and say, oh, Tzafanat Paneach is corrupt, is a bad transliteration into Hebrew of Egyptian. But, you know, that happens in any language. You know, when you try to speak another language and you don't speak it well, it comes out really bad when you say it and no one can understand you and you're trying to speak another language, but that happens because your pronunciation is wrong and you're not quite saying it right. So you can either say merci beaucoup or you can say merci beaucoup. And that's the same thing with the Egyptian name. When it's transliterated into Hebrew, it gets a little, as my father would say, chotched up.
Excellent class. One question. When is your next class?
Yes.
Excellent.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Shabbat shalom. Chodesh tov.
Shabbat shalom.
Okay. And happy Hanukkah.
Thank you so fascinating.
Thank you very much.
Happy Hanukkah. Thank you, Ruthie.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Like you. Thank you. And one last thing. Even though Yosef is called a God, he knows that he's not. He knows that there is one God, and he is the Eved of the one God. And that's why he is Yosef HaTzadik, because he never lets it go to his head. With all the glamour and all the power, he's still Yosef HaTzadik. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. Very good. Thank you very much. Have a good show. Yes. Good
Shabbat. 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 Shabbat.